Tes Nisan, Sunday the 29th of March, Rabbi Akiva Osher Padva, Kashrus Pesach and preparing for the unexpected.
I think really the title should be prepared for the unexpected, rather than preparing for the unexpected. I want to start with a story which happened over 100 years ago. And the story that went as follows. Friedrich Belzer Osmanrucher, the grandfather of the present Belzer Hofleiter, once in a some opportunity said that he felt that cucumber was probably the most appropriate vegetable to use for carapaz. However, Poland in those days, or even Poland today perhaps, isn't the same as England or other Western European countries, and you couldn't just go into the supermarket and pick up vegetables any time of the year, and there were no cucumbers available in Poland at that time of the year. So it was an expression of what his opinion was, that a cucumber looked to be an appropriate vegetable to use for carapaz, but it wasn't a feasible desire because it wasn't available. However, it so happened, he had a chuset who lived in Brod. I'm sure all of you have heard of the town of Brod. And he had a business association with a poet, one of the noblemen in the vicinity. And he went for a meeting at his home concerning his business. And during the course of his meeting, he noticed the gardener coming in from the garden with a basket of vegetables from the kitchen garden, including a few cucumbers. So he got very excited and he couldn't resist the opportunity. And he says to the poets, to the noblemen, "Amazing, you've got cucumbers. You know, I have a Rebbe, a Pan Rabin, that means the Rebbe, the leader, living in the town of Belz, and he has a great desire. We have an upcoming festival called Pesach, and he had a desire for a cucumber. Maybe I could ask you, would you perhaps give me a cucumber?" Very graciously he agreed and he gave him a cucumber. The Chassid was very excited. And he took his cucumber and he traveled over quickly to Belz. And he came into the Belz Rov, it was a few days before Pesach, and he says to Rebbe, "I brought you a cucumber for carapaz." "Thank you very much." He really appreciated it. "Thank you." And he told them to put it away for Pesach. Chassid goes home, and during the course of Chol HaMoed, he met the poet. And the poet says to him, "Nu, how did your present go down? How was the cucumber and bells?" He says, "Yeah, the Rebbe was very happy with it." So they started discussing, how do you manage to grow cucumbers outside? It's still so cold outside, it's Poland, it's the end of winter, very early spring. How are you managing to grow cucumbers? So the guy explains that he's got a thing called a glasshouse, cucumber frames that they used to have. It's a glass contraption under which he can grow his cucumbers even in the weather, its prevailing weather. And he went on to describe the various things that he does to cultivate his cucumbers. And amongst other things, he said he sprays the plant as it's growing with BO, with alcohol, as a nutrient for the cucumbers and to prevent infestation by insects. The chassid felt that the ground could have swallowed him, because here he came with Goy Simcha and he brought the Rebbe a cucumber which could have residues of chometz sprayed on the surface. As soon as he finished his conversation with his parents, he straight away traveled back to Belz, and he came in order to apologize for the michshel which he had brought in the form of a cucumber. As he came in, the Rebbe says to him, "Shalom Aleichem, I just want to apologize to you. You know, you brought me a cucumber which I was very happy to receive. As we were going to Tzreifes Chometz, I started to think, Rabbeinu Shloilem, my father never had a cucumber Pesach. nor did my grandfather. How can I go and eat a cucumber Pesach? So I went and I burnt it with the chometz. Now, l'chayra, every chosid will say, Avada, Moifus, Kudish Buich, and a tzaddik, and a Kudish Buich, and maybe Tikul al Yudam, the Ebisha is Shoma, every tzaddik can prevent him to come into Atakola, which is correct, it's true. However, the Rebbe himself gave a slightly different explanation, which essentially is the same vote, but he said it in a way to make it somewhat more palatable. And he said that Yidden are makbid Pesach on Kaluke Bechamira. We look for chumras or gab chumras in order to be sure that we don't come to eat a mashu chumras be Pesach. When we're talking about a mashu is a very small amount. Kazayas chumras, okay. But a mashu chumras be taroivas, it's very difficult. How on earth can we have this Yat Dishmaya? How can we be sure that the Chas V'Sholom were not Michshel in Pesach? However, if we eat the foods which our parents and our grandparents and Dora, Dora, Yiddish Kinder were eating these foods, and every year they were misbalal and they were asking the Eibishter for Yat Dishmaya, they shouldn't come to any Michshel, so they've got a trodden path. They've already been was in Yiddish ausgebeten. They've been so much tefillahs and so much bakoshes have been laid down for these food that should be they should be ugeeten, I've forgotten the word for it, guarded from a mashu chometz, that we have siyata d'shmaya, we can safely eat it. However, if we come up now with a food which has never been eaten before, on my own merits, I was afraid to go and eat it. So this is one opportunity to mention how a vegetable, a cucumber, who would ever assume that it's a possibility to be a chashash chometz? But there was; it was a chashash chometz, and Baruch Hashem, the Rebbe was nitzily, didn't eat it in Pesach. I was involved once with another interesting vegetable which has a chashash chometz, which again, I'm sure none of you would anticipate it. And the it's not quite a vegetable, it's a fungi, mushrooms. In Eretz Yisrael, the poskim in Eretz Yisrael don't allow, many of the poskim in Eretz Yisrael don't allow mushrooms on Pesach. Because of a chashash chometz. What chashash chometz is there in mushrooms? The mushrooms which they are for sale in Eretz Yisrael, I think they're called champignon, this is the small, tight mushrooms, which are the most common type of mushrooms used in the kitchen, rather than the exotic types. The way they're cultivated today, the spawn, there's a tiny little spore of the bacteria for what the mushroom grows, is spawned onto a wheat kernel. This is the most effective carrier for the spore to live on, up until the point where they want to cultivate it into the mushroom. Therefore, Rabbi Eliashiv B'Shatoy paskened that because Tchilas Michusoy, it starts growing on a wheat kernel, Olechein is like Tchilas Michusoy is on chometz, and it's not allowed in Pesach. I had the opportunity to spend time doing hashgacha on many years ago, but doing hashgacha on mushrooms, on canned mushrooms in a very interesting plant in India, where they invested a lot of money to get the optimum cultivation of mushrooms, and the way they work is as follows: they have exactly the same system. They've got these wheat with the spore on the wheat, which is kept in the refrigerator. Then they create a compost by blending gelule behema with straw, or in their case it's rice straw, and they allow it to denature until it turns into becomes compost. In addition, they prepare another compost, which is made from glula oifus. It's a more refined compost. And then they use big plastic bags. They take a certain quantity of the compost, mix it with the spawned wheat kernels, then they lay a layer on top of the topsoil of this second, the more refined compost, and they put it in special mushroom houses. These mushroom houses have controlled temperature, controlled humidity, and filtered air. And after 21 days, the mushrooms start growing on the surface, on the topsoil. And they grow very quickly, like this expression in English, growing like mushrooms. Literally, you come one day, you see tiny little specks on the top, and the next morning you've got a whole bag that's covered in mushrooms. They cut them all off, and next morning it's again full of mushrooms. Grows very quickly. After a few days, it's grown out. Now, because they were growing it in plastic bags, the bags were transparent, and you could see exactly what was going on. And what happened was, from every spore, which is like a tiny speck on the surface of the wheat, little hairs grew out, and they started growing up through the compost until they reached the topsoil, and then they went up through the topsoil, and as it reached the air at the top of the topsoil, it started to expand and to become a mushroom. The lower part of the bag, where the compost was matted completely by these fine hairs which were growing up through the compost, and by the time the mushrooms started growing, they had drawn out so much nutrients from the compost that it changed from being brown to pale brown, yellow color, because literally it had pulled everything out of the compost, and on the tops of the surface, the mushrooms grew. Now they tell me, and I'm not a scientist, but that's what they tell me, that if they were to put the mushrooms only in the topsoil, or without topsoil, or leave them exposed in the open air, the spore would just die, it wouldn't grow into a mushroom. The only reason it grows through a mushroom is because it goes through the stages of growing up through the compost and through the topsoil to become a mushroom. Well, again, by the time it reaches the top, the wheat is long been disintegrated, and just the same as when you plant wheat in order to grow wheat, you're also growing from a wheat kernel. But the kernel is mishabish, it becomes rotten, it breaks down, and part of the process of growing that the starches and things break down, and that gives the nutrient for the plant to start growing. So l'chayra, by the time it starts growing, there's no chomets, it's not chilitz michus al chomets. I actually even wrote a letter to Rabbi Yashav about it, but for whatever reasons, which I will, he never got to see the letter. But you talk in my that I would have had a chance to explain it to him, maybe he would have changed his, I don't know. We see from this that there are foods which look innocent as you look at them, and often you would never assume there's a possibility that they contain chomets, but the reality is that they do. Some of these foods, I want to give some examples of foods which are not obviously containing chomets. And in spite of the fact that I'm sure the majority of people wouldn't eat them in Pesach without a hechsher, but it's still useful to know that such types of products, however innocent they look, may actually be containing chomets. So I'll just throw a few examples of products, and then we'll discuss how come they can contain chomets. One of them is Coca-Cola. Apple juice, tinned pineapples, tinned peaches, shem and zayas, olive oil, but refined olive oil, and honey. I think just without thinking too deeply, none of these sound like obvious candidates to be chomets. So what's the chomets? Where do they come? How do they all become to be chomets? So we start with Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola, a very large amount of the makeup of Coca-Cola is something called caramel color. Caramel color in its common name, is called burnt sugar. Now, burnt sugar is a definition of how it comes to be a dark brown color. The sugar caramelizes by heating and turns black. However, nowadays, it's almost non-existent caramel color, which is literally made from sugar. Nowadays, it takes starch, which the starches convert into sugars, and then are heated, and then through a process of hydrolysis, becomes it eventually caramelizes and becomes black. So Coca-Cola, especially European Coca-Cola, which I know for a fact, is generally, besides, of course, there's the Coca-Cola with the Hefsche, which they do a special production using other methods of making the caramel. But generally, Coca-Cola, the caramel is made from chometz. Second thing we mentioned is apple juice. Apple juice, if it's pure apple juice, is essentially the juice of apples. However, the nature of apple juice is, and I'm sure all of you know if you've tried it yourselves, that apple juice tends to go brown. In order to prevent it from going brown, they add either something called ascorbic acid, which is vitamin C, and or citric acid. Now, both of these products are produced as well by fermentation of starches. So by the fermentation of the starches, they're producing these various different types of acids. And again, apple juice, in order to have a nice clear apple juice, can be made with ingredients which are chometz. The same is with tinned pineapple. In order to tinned pineapples are usually, well, very often in pure fruit juice, but despite in pure pineapple juice, but they often add citric acid in order to what they call lower the pH and to keep it at the right acidity. Tinned peaches is very often made with glucose, and glucose is a sugar, but it's made by the fermentation of starches, and very often, especially European glucose, is made from wheat. Olive oil is one of the few oils which are definitely not kidneyous. Vegetable oil, which is not kidneyous, and many Yidna Mahadra only to use olive oil in Pesach. However, extra virgin olive oil is indeed 100% pure olive oil, which has no chances of having any additives. Refined olive oil, there could be a number of challenges with refined olive oil, but one of the issues with it as well is they're allowed to adjust the pH in refined olive oil, and again, you've got the issues of what acid was used to do the refining, which can again be chometz. Finally, honey. Honey is supposed to be pure honey, should be pure honey, but it's unfortunately quite common, the case that honey, especially purchased in places like China, that they add glucose into the honey, because it's a similar substance, it looks like similar, tastes similar, very difficult to notice if you blend it into the honey, but it's much cheaper. So again, you can be buying honey and thinking you're buying pure honey, and in actual fact, it's containing glucose.
Can you notice on the ingredients on the bottle?
It shouldn't be there officially, so they won't be writing. But if you're buying it from a company, a reliable, good quality company, they do analysis on the honey to check that it doesn't exist. That's how we give a claim to honey, because the companies, we know that the companies are vigilant and they're doing the proper checks and making sure they're getting pure product. But that's essentially the chashash which could be in honey.
How far removed is this stuff from Pinchas?
Sometimes it's only one step removed. That means, for example, citric acid, the main feedstock that's used to ferment is starch, is yeast. It's starch from could be hummus. It goes through a procedure of fermentation where you've got the bacteria with the fermentation, and it goes through crystallization and drying, but essentially the main feedstock is hummus.
Is it qualified, defined as hummus in halacha?
The OU, for example, gives a hechsher to some of these products, kidneys. They give a hechsher kosher lePesach because they say it's kidneys shenishtana. And they, because it's kidneys shenishtana, it's really not considered kidneys. It's not a common consensus amongst all the other kashrus agencies. And with chometz, of course, if we're talking about in a situation where there's a bidyeved that something happened, you're looking for a kula, there may be a rabbanim who would go down that route. But in general, in oilam kashrus, it's accepted to be considered chometz.
What percentage of the stuff are you talking about in the finished product?
It depends on the nature of the product. If we're talking about citric acid, it's usually very little because it's only to adjust the pH. If we're talking about glucose, it's a very high percentage. Everything has its own, has its...
And the glucose will be counted as function?
Yeah. It's just sweetened, it's just carbohydrates very easily change from starch into sugar, but it's still the same product.
It's not Ishtana or anything like
that. Choyonish.
Carry on. Stuff can be made of potatoes as well.
It can be, of course. Any form of starch can be used, but for example, in China, the majority are using either corn starch or tapioca starch, which are both not chometz. In Europe, in places where there's a lot of wheat, they often use wheat. It depends on the nature, what's available and cheap at the place where they're making it. These issues sometimes work the other way as well. Sometimes something looks, and along the lines which we were just talking, sometimes when things can be nishtana and therefore considered something different, and sometimes things are not what they look like emotionally or on the misclavishon, the first impressions. One of these products, which is interesting to discuss, is a product called xylitol, which London Besdin gives the hechsher to xylitol for Pesach, and I've had the privilege of many times to be in the factory where they make it, one of the factories where they make it. And xylitol is a product which is present in certain types of wood. So in the European and in the Scandinavia, they make it from the bark of a birch tree. And in China, they make it from the cob of a corn. The cob of a corn, of corn.
Corn cob.
The cob, though, not from maize on its own, but the central cob on which the maize grows. And in this certain provinces in China where they grow millions of tons of corn, and once they've removed the kernels of the corn, they collect the cobs. And they have huge mountains, slack heaps of these corn cobs, which they then go through a process. It's literally a very straightforward and simple process. I mean, simple, straightforward. But I mean, it's not complicated in the amount of materials used. All they do is that they soak the cobs in water with a bit of sulfuric acid, which allows a certain substance to leach out of the wood or out of the cob into the water. The water then through a process, it's called an ion exchange, which will it's a column filled with little resin which absorb or connect the required component, gets caught onto these resins, which are then released, and it's in the form of a product called xylose. This xylose is then hydrogenated, and it turns over to xylitol, which is crystallized. Refined, crystallized, and made into sugar. So it's coming from corn by name. It's growing on corn. And I've spoken to a number of rabbonim in America who were very reluctant, and they said that it's pasnish. You can't give a hechsher to something that's called made from corn. So I explained to them it's not made from corn. It's made from the cob, but the corn grows on it. But they couldn't bring themselves to approve it for Pesach. But the Meiser, it doesn't contain chomer, kidneys, and it's got nothing to do with the corn. The xylos is not existent in the corn, it's only existent in the cob, and l'chein, it's not, there's no problem for Pesach.
Had
product
built out of the stalk of the wheat, would it not be related to the wheat itself?
For the straw? The straw
chomets?
So.
The stalk, which is not.
It's commonish. Why not? Yeah, but even the stalk of corn is not chomets. The stalk of wheat is not chomets. You have with chomets, you've got a bigger problem, because if you have a chashu, if one or two kernels are left behind, you've got a mashu chomets. With kidneys, there's no problem with mashi kidneys. Yeah. So even if there's some kernels left over, so what? Big deal. Last year, I had the opportunity to talk Boisa Mokum, Boisa Zman, the same time of the year, the same place, and we had a discussion about paper, cardboard, because there were people, there was an opinion that because paper or cardboard can be made with starch in it, in order to act as a bonding agent when they're producing the cardboard, so it's lokhi b'chometz, and it's also. Somebody even went to the extent to say that even if somebody comes and says that he's found paper which is not chometz, he's guilty of misinformation or disinformation because it's impossible. So first of all, Hashem, I'm happy to see that this year the same Hechsher is already giving a Hechsher on such cardboard, so I feel vindicated. Obviously, it's not impossible. But the paper which we give a Hechsher, the cardboard which Laman Bezen gives a Hechsher, none of them have any Chashash Chometz, and they're not Gavile Poker, they have no Shaykhs with Chometz whatsoever. But the fact remains, there are papers which do contain chometz. That means that during the course of manufacturing of the paper, they do add starches, and starches, of course, could be kidneys, it could be tapioca, it could be potato starch, but it could just as well be chometz starch as well. So what is the case? Of course, modern people buy with a Hechsher, they're perfectly safe. But what is the case if you didn't buy with a Hechsher? If you got a cardboard which was not made specifically without starch of chometz. What is the halacha? The truth is, we spoke about it last year, but because we're talking about hidden chometz, there's no way looking at a piece of paper you can possibly find chometz in it, and there's no way you would, unless somebody's told you about it, you'd know where to think. Why would you expect there could be chometz in paper? But what is the halacha lemaisa if you do have paper which was made with chometz? So the first point is, in Shulchan Aruch there's a mention of paper cards which were made with chometz, and the Ramon writes in Simon Tuf Mem Zayin, Yesh nim nim meliska kalashilchem klafim and nekrum karten with Pesach, the chosh shem yipul mechumas hanokshus behem lepach hamakal. They used to play playing cards in the old days, were made with starch, and there are some people who don't play cards the whole year, it's considered. But those who do play, some of them don't play with them on Pesach, according to the Ramah. At least not at the table. And the reason was because they were afraid that maybe some of the chumash noxious about yifruch the tocha marcho. In a similar vein, we find as well in Mognavom and Tuf Mem Beis, he says, he's talking about begodim, the Rebbe Chaba says you're allowed to wash clothes with chol of chitta, with milk of wheat milk, which means starch, wheat starch, even shloshim yom kodim and toch shloshim tzumach lechag. But the Ramah says that the mekol mokum osel atzia osa begudim ala shulchan. If you wash the tablecloth and made it starched with wheat starch, you shouldn't put it on the tablecloth on the table which you're going to be eating by. The chashirin sheyifach ksas mehem letoch hamachol. Why? The Rifur Omim, Yesh Behem Ksasma Moshes, Kemach Cholof Chitta. Sometimes there's mamoshes, there's physical flakes of starch on the tablecloth, and we are afraid it might fall into the mouth, and you might come to eat it. And he goes on to say, Tzi'if Enoshim, starched scarves or tichlach that they used to wear. Also, if it's made with starch, agilin nesaknum im kemach, that they used to do it with flour, yesh lasirim shas achile. Why? The shema yifrach ksas mehem letoch amachel. So it seems like, again, the same thing. He was afraid that if you're wearing a starched beggar, the starched scarf or whatever, even a kittel, yeah, and those kittel could be done with starch as well. You shouldn't wear it at the time while you're eating, because you're afraid that it might drop into your food. Chok Yaakov says it's not. He argues with the Ramon. He says with the Mogav Ramon. He says no. We've never seen anybody should be afraid to use clothes that are made with starch. He said the Ramon, maybe Mogav Ramon was talking specifically about the tzi'if enoshim, which they used to make very stiff, so they used to soak it in a large amount of starch, to the extent that it was takach shash, as he describes, shemi yifra notach amachol. But normal starch clothes don't drop into the food, and therefore it's not a problem. How are we doing for time? I just want to finish in two words. But the difference is that I could carry on, but the most important point is that there's a fundamental difference between these products and paper which we made today. That in those days, the paper was literally dipped into starch, and there was a layer of starch on the paper, which was a chashah meyifra. The same thing with the clothes. Nowadays, the starch is incorporated in the paper in a way it's impossible it should come off. It's also nifkem completely during the process, so it's not really lachila even before it became paper, and also it's dried in a way which is completely dried, in which case even the chovius was they used to put dough, if it was completely dry you were allowed to use the chatchila. So therefore lamase la'alocha, there's very little chash in using such paper.
Right.
But they used to help everyone to have a file of a caution in place.
You're not asking cucumber,
are you? In Belgium,
it's on the side. Rabbi Sankar, Kaddish in a moment, just to remind you, I also